This is Speaking of Events, the podcast for event industry leaders. We bring together innovators, strategic rock stars, and visionary creatives to talk all about events, industry trends, and anything in between. And speaking of events, here is your host, Carrie Garbus.
As you may or may not know, I grew up in Baltimore, Maryland. And one Thanksgiving, my siblings and I decided we were going to go volunteer at the food bank in the morning of Thanksgiving to feed those in need for the holiday. So we get there super early and we get assigned to different stations. And my job was to take boxes from somebody, like from a big truck. And then I was handing them out to people who were kind of getting sent over and assigned to my area in the parking lot. So I was actually face-to-face, if you will, hands-to-hands with the people who were getting the food, which was really cool. So I spent a few hours handing out boxes, wishing people happy Thanksgiving. And as the morning went on, as I'm doing this, I realized that I had come to that event with some really preconceived notions about what people who needed food look like. I thought, everybody's gonna be homeless. Everyone's gonna look scary. I'm gonna be terrified. And I was so wrong. And I was proven even extra wrong when somebody that I went to high school with at the time walked over and got the box for his family. And it was my first glimpse into what food insecurity looks like. And because on that day I learned it looks like you, it looks like me, and it looks like our friends and our family. And so I'm so excited to have as a guest today, somebody who knows way more about this than I do, and also knows some things about events as well. So I'm very pleased to introduce to you my guest today on Speaking of Events, the Director of Strategic Services at HMI Performance Incentives, and so much more that we're going to hear about. It's Kate Cardoso. Hello, Kate.
Hello, what a lovely intro. And I really appreciated that story.
Well, thank you. You and your work inspired it. So, and thank you for giving me space to bring that memory back. That was a really cool. I hadn't thought about that in a long time. So thank you so much for that.
Of course.
Are you ready to talk a little bit about events? And then we'll definitely talk about passion projects too. How about that?
I'm ready to talk about anything.
All right. Okay.
Hold on. Maybe not.
Wait a minute. Change of play. Okay. And it'll be like, speaking of roller coasters. Okay. No, we'll stick with the planned agenda, which is, Kate, what is the one thing you wished more people knew about events?
Is this a question pre-COVID or a post-COVID or however I want to answer it kind of thing?
This is however you want to, anyway, always, pre, post, during,
you know,
whatever.
Things, and the reason that I ask is that things have changed so dramatically for everyone and everything that we do, especially, of course, for events. And so we're working now in environments where there are staffing shortages. I think everyone is dealing with that situation. There are supply chain vendor issues. And so I think that the lesson here and the learning teachable moment is patience. And I hope that at this point, we've all become so much more patient with each other because things take longer. People are working harder than ever. And so I think that everybody needs to be patient and show a lot more compassion. We're working in really some situations that our timelines are tight. We've got clients that are coming back now and saying, all right, we're ready to start again. Let's do something 6 months from now. And that kind of a timeline with big conferences and incentive travel programs, that's a tight timeline in the best of times. Pre-COVID, that's a tight timeline. Nowadays, that's hard. And so we are facing some situations where our vendors, in particular destination management companies, we'll say, hey, I don't have the capacity to take on another program. So it's about working with new vendors and finding new vendors and making sure that that there are some really strong trusted relationships going into these things. Budgets, that's another really big issue. champagne tastes on a beer budget. We've all heard that expression. And it used to be kind of doable, not really. Now it's completely not doable. Prices have gone up for everything, for gas, and that affects transportation, for food, and that impacts the food and beverage budgets. So cost is a big factor, and clients, companies wanting to do events need to really be adding 10, 15, 20% to pre-COVID budgets to be able to get even the same level of service and satisfaction.
Absolutely. I'm curious if we had rolled back the clock and we had this conversation prior to March of 2020, what, yeah. I don't even know what year it is.
Anymore. I didn't either.
2012. Maybe had we had it back in 2019, What do you think your answer would have been if I said, tell me one thing people don't know, or you wish people knew about events?
Something that remains an issue that just has come back as an issue is availability. Availability. Hotels pre-COVID, they were busy and their rates were high and business was good. That floor fell out dramatically in March of 2020. If we're correct on that. And so really coming back a year ago, we were getting some amazing deals, hotel deals, because they were desperate for the business.
Right.
And now those rates, they are right back to where they were in 2019, leading into 2020, early 2020. And then some. The flights, air right now, I have never seen air such an issue. I personally was stranded in Orlando for 48 hours on two separate occasions within the last 2 months. And I'm a pretty savvy traveler. I hope so, after doing this for 20 years.
I would say so, knowing your history. Yes.
I hope so. So I think, you know, air was better pre-COVID. It's not as good now, but we're seeing really the same kind of environment situation with hotels and rates and availability and inventory. So some of the same problems and some new ones.
Wow. I booked a flight this morning for a conference that we're doing some workshops and I'm speaking at in June. And I could not believe the price was astronomical. I couldn't yes. believe it. It was
and yes, add really add a couple of days on the end in case you get stuck.
Right. That's so curious about that one.
Your calendar.
Yes, exactly. Right. Just put a couple of days buffer on each yes. side, only to Florida. So
where I was stuck.
Wow. So strategy is a big part of your job. So would you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So strategy is part of, I think, all of our jobs, right? In both our personal and professional lives, we're always thinking ahead and trying to do things the best way. For me, the most efficient and effective way. Those are, I think, my two favorite words, efficiency and effectiveness. And so really it's about thinking through all of the options. As event planners, we really do need to be strategic more in the way that we are proactive, that we are thinking of everything that could go wrong so that we can prevent it, hopefully, or at the very least minimize negative impacts and damage. So strategy is really just trying to find the best way forward. And I'm using it more certainly as I'm trying to help clients find the right fit for hotels, for destinations. I'm using it in my work with the community kitchen here, and how do we best provide services to people who are either facing food insecurity or housing insecurity. So it's really just thinking through best practices and best ways forward. And I think that the pandemic has allowed us to think strategically in ways that we weren't thinking strategically before. Yeah. It's kind of opened up so many new ways of thinking about things, of opportunities and imagining what could possibly be. So I think that strategy has changed since the pandemic. And I think that it's changed in really positive ways.
Wow. Great. I feel a little silly moving to this question, but because I still want to talk about the community service initiatives and your volunteer work, but I have to ask, because you know, I'm obsessed with speakers and all things speaker training. So do you have any speaker disaster stories you could share?
I have some interesting speaker stories. They fortunately weren't quite disasters, but so the two that come to mind, one was we were at the Hotel Arts in Barcelona. It was a conference. We had hired a speaker to come in and do an opening session. And the speaker flew in the night before from the US. We all know what jet lag feels like. And so the morning of the session, it's about an hour before go time, and we can't get a hold of the speaker. He's staying in the hotel. We're calling the room, we're calling the cell phone, we're calling the assistant, and we can't find him. Turns out he had overslept all of his alarms. He wasn't hearing the phone ringing in the room. So it took the hotel security going to the room to get him up. We got him there in time, and he was, of course, horribly apologetic, and that could happen to any of us. But that was a real nail biter of a situation. The other one.
Wait,
was,
I also want to know what sort of like melatonin supplement he was on to get.
I don't know. You're right. I'd like to get some.
I'm a little jealous. Okay, go ahead. Please go on.
The second one, it was another conference. It was a conference for gas station convenience store managers. And so the client contact, the host had wanted to bring in a speaker to talk about health. And so it was a well-known person in the health and fitness industry coming in to try and help these people get healthier. We could all use some advice for how to live healthier lives. But one of the pieces of advice was to just not put yourself in situations where you are surrounded by bad food, sugary drinks, sodas, things like that. And so the messaging was completely off to this room full of gas station convenience store managers who are literally all day, their job is
surrounded
to be surrounded
by all of that.
So it was a somewhat of a miss. It wasn't a total disaster, but it was one of those know your audience, read the room kind of situations.
So knowing some of your community and personal initiatives that are food insecurity driven, how did that particular instance even sit with you kind of emotionally of that? I don't know. I'm just curious as to how that might've felt for you in that moment.
Well, so this was years ago. This was pre-COVID. This might've been 10 years ago, but it's a memory I'll, of course, always have, right? And yes. It's interesting, right? Sometimes the most memorable experiences are the ones that don't go so well. Here we are to create these perfect experiences for all of our attendees, but sometimes the most memorable ones are the ones that don't go according to plan. I am a very healthy person. It's a real focus for me mentally, emotionally. I run, I eat healthy because it just makes me feel good. So I did feel bad that here were some people that were in need of some tools to be healthier. And they were being given some completely unrealistic tools. And the credibility behind the message was lost because of that.
Yeah. So it goes to really knowing the audience.
Yes, reading the room.
reading the room, or also maybe reading the abstract that you're sent ahead of time by your event.
The pre-meetings that we had done. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Is that, and what are a couple of the things you do to help prepare speakers, or what do you want speakers to do?
You really shouldn't hire a speaker without doing at least one or two pre-meetings. The content, you hire a speaker because you like what they have to say, right? But it's so much more meaningful and impactful to the audience if they can tie it into what you're trying to achieve with the conference. And so if the speaker is given the opportunity, I would hope that a good speaker, and you can correct me if this is incorrect, but a good speaker will insist on talking to the client to understand what the group is, what the goal is of the conference. So if they're not asking, that might be a flag. And if they aren't, you still need to really initiate those conversations to help them understand why did you choose them? What message are you trying to get through to this audience so that it can really just tie in a really nice way?
Absolutely. If my company, if Ovations brought in as the speaker trainers and we're working with the speakers, we ask, who is your audience? What is the message they need to hear? How do we alter what you've gotten, what you have prepared? Same thing. If I'm hired as a speaker, you absolutely need to know those questions. And even down, I think, to the nitty gritty of how are people going to be dressed? How to make sure that, well, I want to stay my authentic self. Mm-hmm. I don't want to look like I'm wearing a costume in any way.
Right.
Essentially. Yeah. So absolutely. You are 100% correct.
Yeah.
So thank you for that. And I'm going to thank my convenience store owner next time I go in.
And don't tell him to stay away from unhealthy food.
Right. Say, you go.
Maybe that is a hard environment, outside. Right?
Yes. Very hard. Very hard. Absolutely. So switching gears yet again and getting into more of a passionate side of things, although I'm certainly passionate about speakers, would you talk a little bit about the HMI's Community Service Initiative?
Sure. So we decided during the pandemic that we needed to reframe and rethink about how we did our mostly incentive travel programs. We also do conferences and meetings. So we decided to create this concept, not create, but really work on this concept called Group Travel Reimagined. And it was a way that we could change the experience, mostly for the attendees, so that they could better connect with the destination. They could better connect with the hosts of the program. They could better connect with each other. They could better connect with themselves, because we were all looking for that connection piece after being in quarantine for however long it was. I think it depends on where you were, but that was a lonely time. And so to give people the opportunity to travel again together, but to really make it better and more meaningful was something that we focused on. So we created this whole campaign around it, and it was about rediscovery, reconnection, rejuvenation, re-engagement. And the most important part for me, at least, of that was these community service initiatives, which are good in so many ways. For me, it was about food insecurity, and food insecurity is everywhere, unfortunately, right? Everywhere we go, there is food insecurity. There are people who aren't getting what they need as far as food. So that became part of this program that we did, this reimagined program. And so we would reach out to local food banks. A couple of examples: I was in Puerto Vallarta, I was in Aruba, I was in Monterey, California. Again, food insecurity in all of those places. The Pebble Beach, California one was, am I going to find a place? Who knew? I should know. It's the Garden of America. So there are so many migrant farm workers who are there, and the rate of homelessness amongst children there is highest in the country. So reaching out to these food banks to say, hey, you know, what do you do? Because every food bank is different depending on the needs of the community. What do you need? Because that is also different. And then how do we help in a way that is sustainable for you? Because these nonprofit food banks, they're understaffed, they're under-resourced, they're underfunded. So you can't go into a place and ask them to put all of this work into something, because they won't do it, or we'll pull them away from doing other really mission critical work. So it was finding out what they needed and then doing it in a way that gave the attendees a chance to be a part of it. So in all of these locations, Aruba, Puerto Vallarta, we had the attendees come for an hour and put together, in one case, it was bag lunches, 600 bag lunches for the Vallarta Food Bank. In another case, it was boxes of non-perishable food items and hygiene supplies for families in need in Aruba. And so they got there, they did it, they used their own hands to be a part of this. And the experience has been really rewarding for all parties. And so it's been just a very exciting initiative that has changed how we do business.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you.
And you are also personally involved with the community service at Manna Community Kitchen. Mm-hmm. And that's in Northampton, Massachusetts, is that correct?
It is. Yes.
And so I'd love to hear more about that.
Because of Manna, this initiative has really taken off and wow. been so successful. It was so many lessons that I learned. It was a crash course in how community kitchens and food banks work because there was no travel happening in 2020. That's when I got involved because I needed something to do. I needed something to do to help others because it was just feeling like such a hard time. I needed a break from my own homeschooling with the kids and my husband. There was a lot of time together. So I started volunteering at a homeless shelter in town. They created a homeless shelter at the high school in my town. So I volunteered there and then I got connected to MANA. And of course, MANA's work, MANA's been around for 30 plus years. It's really interesting. You were sharing your story at first, but 30 years ago, I was dragged there by my parents to volunteer and to help make dinners for people who were living unhoused, and so it's a really nostalgic thing, and it's for me really special to kind of be back in such a different capacity. So I volunteered at MANA, really became involved, and they have done so much more in the community than they did 30 years ago. It was meals. Now it's really about providing services to people mostly who are unhoused, to try and connect them with housing, to try and connect them with government assistance, to get them to the point of being able to be housed. It's not like, as you mentioned, we have these perceptions about people who are in need of food and people who are in need of housing. And it's so much more complicated than it appears. And so just connecting somebody to an apartment or a house isn't necessarily going to be successful unless that person is ready physically, mentally, emotionally to be able to do that. The last 2 years have really been a crash course in all of the idiosyncrasies and all of the complexities behind food insecurity and housing insecurity.
Wow. Thank you. So you grew up in Northampton, Massachusetts. Yes. Headed off to Skidmore, which was close-ish to where I went to college, which was Syracuse. You were in Syracuse Springs.
Yeah.
And so what happened? I realized it's been a minute.
I blinked.
To here, we're in events, we're doing hardcore community service and giving back. We're married, we've got two fabulous daughters. I put in the fabulous part. You just said daughters, just FYI.
They can be fabulous. Yeah, they're fabulous most of the time.
I get it. I have one, but yeah, I get it. Okay. So yeah, how did you get here?
I know, right? It's a very circuitous route. So I went to Skidmore. I'm married to my high school sweetheart. So that's kind of a boring, it's been around forever. We went either forever type of situation. And he actually went to Brandeis. So we did long distance for a while. I graduated and I moved to Boston. I had been working, done some internships for a computer software company in college. When the tech boom was happening, the company went public. The summer I was an intern, I think I got $1,000 in shares or something like that. So it was a really exciting experience. And so I did start and I started full time with them after Skidmore. But just as I was there for the tech boom, it was the tech bust after I graduated. This is 2001. And so the writing was on the wall. Things were not going to last. So I ended up taking a job for a market research company in Philadelphia. And that was very interesting. It actually was for one of the largest hotel chains. We were doing a monthly customer satisfaction survey for them. So maybe that's what got me into this. But I did that for about a year. And then I really wanted to get back to Massachusetts. So a friend who was at this market research company had gone to work for Meritz and Meritz Research. And she said, hey, there's a really tiny office of Meritz. In Boston, outside of Boston, Swampscott, want me to try and connect you. And so I interviewed and got the job. And this small office, they did really high-end incentive travel programs. So it was to really cool places and really nice hotels. And so that's when the golden handcuffs came on, because it was just such a cool, you know, for a 20-something person to be traveling for work to these amazing places. And it just fit personality-wise, the details and all of that really was kind of what I like to do. I didn't know it at the time, but looking back, it makes sense. In the interim, I went and got a global MBA at Suffolk in Boston. Graduated with my MBA the month before I had my first daughter. We ended up moving back to Northampton because it's such a great place to raise kids. And so had a second daughter and the pandemic, and here we are having a conversation.
And here we are. And then it's today. And wonderful. Wonderful.
I did that pretty quick, right?
You did.
20 years.
Yes. That was real. That was, I think that was a record for speaking of events. So thank you. That was, but, and yet I was like, and then, and I loved it. Thank you. Thank you. So bringing us home here on this episode of the podcast, are you ready, Kate, for our lightning express round?
I'm ready.
Okay. So we're going to put 45 seconds on the clock. I'm going to ask you 7 questions. Here we go.
Okay.
What is your favorite moment in the event process?
Site inspections.
Oh, that's a new one. Yes.
Getting to go and experience a place.
Yes. So you have traveled extensively. Name your top 3 places you've seen.
Four Seasons, Costa Rica. Grand Velas, Riviera Maya, and Madrid, Spain. I don't have a hotel.
Okay. Excellent. Who do you consider your mentor?
I have a couple of mentors. I have Charlie Coleman. I worked with him for years. He was my client. Then we were colleagues. I would have to say Harold McCaffey. Also worked with him very closely. He was in sales. I was operations. I think those are my top 2.
Wonderful. So what exactly do you do to bide your time when you're stuck at the Orlando airport?
Work, read, podcasts. I love Tig Notaro and Cheryl Hines have a really funny podcast. So those 3 things.
That sounds good. That would occupy me for about 4 hours. I don't know. I'm not sure what I would do with the other time, but
I don't either. Yeah.
Right. So what do you do every day to stay healthy and sane?
I run, I do Pure Barre. I drink mochas, and all of those things really help me be a functioning, happy person.
Love it. Love it. And if you weren't talking to me right now, what would you be doing?
Work.
Yeah.
Last
question.
Bar. Yeah.
Last question. What is your favorite thing to do with your daughters?
My daughters are very different. So they're 2 very different things that we will do. My older daughter just loves to kind of do a spa day. So she'd love to go get her nails done together. She'd love to go makeup shopping. My younger daughter, we go to our favorite coffee shop, Woodstar. We'd get a mocha and a hot chocolate, and then we'd go walk on this beautiful trail called the Smith Trail in Northampton.
All of those sound great. And I think my daughter would be in for all of those.
How yes. Well,
thank you for sharing that with me. And thank you for getting through our Lightning Express round. You made it. Excellent. So Kate, where can people find you if they would like to connect with you?
You can find me on LinkedIn, Kate Cardoso. I don't think there are many of us.
We'll post your link. So
oh, perfect. Yes. Great. Yes. Yeah. So LinkedIn, email, phone, post it all. I'm happy to talk to anybody, especially about these community service initiatives. If I can make this happen more often and help, no ties attached, then it would be such a wonderful thing for me to be able to help steer companies in this direction.
Oh, wow. Yes. Thank you. Thank you for that. Thank you for being my guest and taking the time with me today. This was a soul-filling conversation.
Very fun. I so appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you to your audience. Thank you to your audience, my audience. And remember, if you like events, if you love events, even if you loathe events, tell someone about this podcast. You never know who's listening this far. And again, Kate, the best. Thank you. Thank you. And remember, whatever you speak about, to be speaking of events. Have a good day.
Speaking of Events is sponsored by Ovation, the gold standard for professional presence and speaker development training, helping everyone get prepared, get confident, and get ovationed.